Welcome everyone to iloverealestate.tv. Great to have you here again. I'm actually sitting in the beautiful Melbourne on the 47th floor of the Sofitel, overlooking the water and the bridges and the city. It's just gorgeous. I'm in the middle of a bit of a tour around Australia, and I've been out talking to members and students and family, and, you know, it's been great. I've been really connecting with a lot of people and finding out where they're at and what they're up to, and, oh my goodness, the stories that I've been told on this tour have been absolutely amazing as to what people have done in so relatively short spaces of time. So great to connect with everybody again. Now today what we're going to be doing is talking about zoning and zoning changes and how you can actually look at the zoning of certain areas and the movement and changes between councils rezoning areas and how you can get in and make money. That's what it's all about, guys. It's all very well to know this information, but unless you actually put it in a place, you don't make any money out of it. So that's what we want to talk about this morning. Now, to help me out today, I've got my good mate Ian. Are you ready to go, Ian?
I'm ready to go.
Okay. Now, one of the great things about focusing in on zoning and council zonings is being able to identify properties that have manufactured growth potential and upside. And the thing is that a lot of the owners of these properties don't even realize that their property's either been rezoned or in a certain zoning or anything else, and they're sitting on untapped potential and they don't even know. So this is where an educated investor and a astute investor can actually go in and really take advantage of some of the manufactured growth strategies that, you know, I teach and we do in boot camps and that kind of stuff. So let's start with the basics. Let's go back to finding out what zone a certain property is in. Ian, let's talk about, the local councils, and in particular the local council websites, because, most of the councils now are integrated and on the internet and all their zones is there. So all this information can actually be done from your office.
Yeah, absolutely. So the best, obviously Google the local council name or Google the suburb and council and the local council will come up. So, you know, even though you might be in a suburb of Brisbane and you don't know what the council is, you just Google that suburb and the first link on Google coming up will come up with the local council. Going into there, you can generally find some very decent maps in the website. You go into the planning section. That's where all the town planners that work in the council, that they put all their maps up. And what you're looking to do is find those areas. And generally they're colour-coded. So you're looking at the colour-coding on the right-hand side of a map as a key and saying, well, what are the areas that you can develop in?
What sort of things are we looking for, Ian? We're, the colour codes, they're going to say things like rural and rural residential if you're looking at more country towns. They're going to say, residential A, and the terminology is a little bit different right across the country, but residential A, if, as an example, would be that you can only put a single house on that particular lot. And others are, I'm using some of the older terminology, but residential B or a higher densities type of zoning is more what we're looking for, so that you can either break down the property into smaller lots, as in, divided into two or three or whatever it might be, or in fact go out and look for higher density zoning again, where we're actually looking at perhaps pulling down what's there or leaving what's there and adding units. Really increasing the density.
Yeah, so some of the things you should be looking for are the zonings, and within the same council you might have a zoning map that says residential B or 2B or multiple residential or multiple dwellings.
How do they know what that means?
So what you do is you go into the local council plan, and there are different namings of that. It could be the local environment plan, it could be a development control plan, it could be a planning instrument. You go into the particular planning instrument and there'll be a whole section on definitions. And when you look for the definitions on, what 2A is or 2B or multi-residential or whatever they've called it on the map, you'll be able to work out generally what's available to be able to put on that land. Now, even before you go looking at council maps, you could simply take a drive down streets in local suburbs. and look at those places where they're single houses, but they've got townhouses or villas or a block of units that are only just recently been constructed.
And, you know, people drive past this every single day on their way to work, backwards and forwards. But until, you know, until they get that educated head on their shoulders, they miss it. They don't see the potential of properties absolutely everywhere. And, you know, what that means and then how to backtrack things and work out profits on them, which is another story. We won't go there today. But identifying these areas is actually really quite simple. I like the map side of things. I like to be able to, you know, identify them in the comfort of my own office where you target an area. And obviously, you know, you do grid variance analysis, which I talk about all the time, to identify the suburbs that you want to be in. And then you really hone down and look at the zoning in the suburbs that you're interested in and where the higher density zonings are, because you can have two houses side by side and one's in a high density zoning and one's in a low density zoning, and on one, you know, you might be able to build a block of six and the other one you can have a single house, and they're side by side and you go, why is that the case? Or they're across the road, you know, one side you can, one side you can't. And this is where really understanding these council zonings, it's worth its weight in gold, and it's research that's easy to do. You've just got to apply yourself.
Yeah, and generally when the councils sometimes change zonings, and they don't send out a letter or put a sign down the street to say we've just changed the zoning in this street, they just do it. And it's an application that goes generally to the state government, and the state government, the minister at the state government level actually has to sign off on that. So there is different ways of researching, and Dipna's course, she teaches you who to go and see and who to ask questions of to see what areas are changing, why are they changing it, why the council's looking at changing that particular zoning, and you are well ahead of the game. Most developers know how that works, and they're always making sure they've befriended someone in the council and they get the inside information about those areas that could be changing in the future.
And even after that change, as Ian said, you know, they don't write letters to all of the landholders and say, oh, your zoning's changed. We can now build, you know, block four units on your property. So you've got all of these owners that are just, you know, sitting around on their blocks of land, happily living, working, whatever. And a lot of them don't realise the potential that they're actually sitting on. Now, what you do with that knowledge is, will determine on how much money you actually end up making. Obviously, the next stage is to either door knock or write letters or, you know, find out who the owner of the property is so that you can actually access that person to work out whether there's a deal that can be done either with them or just to buy the property and do the deal yourself. Let's talk about, Ian, the way that you would research the owner of a property. So you've seen it on a map and you can go, okay, on this street, you know, I've identified a particular couple of blocks that look pretty good. How do you find the owner of it?
Generally, there's a few ways you can do it. I always like to Google an address to start with, so the actual address to see what information comes up about it. You may well get a police report. You could
You've
get
had a few of those.
Yes, I can. Not because they did a report on me, but
yeah, we better clarify that.
So there is different ways of researching the property first, and then, you know, Dipner also teaches, as a student, ways of being able to use different software that allows you to find the details of property owners, depending on the privacy of the state, that what you're allowed, and how much they also own. So, you know, you can find the address, you can do a map overlay, and you can put in the details on this particular software. You can put the map details in and then find out who owns each and every one of those properties. Now, sometimes on that software there's actually the ability that with a phone number there, or you just go searching. And really, realistically, that the unusual names, or, you know, the John Smiths are going to be difficult to find if they don't have a phone number. But if you do have the Ian Ugardes of the world, you probably will find their phone number. So that's one particular way. But I always like the door knock. Even if it's a rental property, generally the tenants, unfortunately, the tenants sometimes know who the landlord is, and they can give you details, or they can pass it on, or they'll tell you who the real estate agent is that looks after the property, and then you can contact the property managing agent, and they will contact the owner.
So one way or another, you can get to the owner of the property. Now, you know, from here, you need to work out where your angle of attack is to actually, you know, cut a deal one way or another. And it might be just a generic kind of letter, say, you know, you're interested in moving into the area, and you'd like to perhaps talk to them about buying their property. If they've ever thought of selling, and sometimes it's just a straight no, and it's like, oh, well, it's cost you, or, you know, writing a letter and a postage stamp. Door knocking, I like that because it's a face-to-face scenario where you can sit down, you can talk to the person and see whether they're interested in selling, or even whether they're interested in doing a deal together with you, because you've got to understand that a lot of these people have no idea how to actually increase the value of their property, how to benefit from, doing some of the manufactured growth strategies that I teach on their actual property, and you can share the profits with them without actually having to buy it and incur stamp duty and purchasing costs and all of the other things associated with it. So there's a lot of avenues there to go down depending on what the other person wants. And, you know, we talk about this all the time, Ian, but it's so important to try and work out what will benefit the other person, because sometimes they, you know, you've just hit them at the right time and they go, I just want to sell, I want to, you know, I'm moving into a retirement home, or I want to trip off around Australia, or, you know, I was actually thinking of selling because my daughter's now moved away and I want to go and live next to her. And, you know, there's a thousand reasons why people have thought, well, you know, I actually am keen on selling. Or there might be a thousand reasons as to why somebody would like to do a deal with you and pick up an extra 50, 60, 100 grand on the side, where they haven't got the capital to do it themselves, haven't got the knowledge of how to do it themselves, and why not share the profit around and to be able to maximise their position. And that's probably money they've never had in their lives or been able to see that they could actually create themselves.
And what also astounds me is that people would have an issue. There's a lot of people would have an issue about knocking on the front door and asking the question, you know, what happens if they say no? Well, I can tell you I've had a lot of no's in my time. And
you should stand in front of the mirror and say no to yourself and say, did that actually hurt? No, it didn't. I can handle it.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's not as if I walk away from that no thinking, oh, my, you know, I'm going to have to... Yeah, I'm going to have to go get some counselling now because someone said no to me. You know, I grew up my whole life with my parents saying no to me until I was... Well, they still say no. So, you know, you've got to give someone an opportunity, and it's not your right or wrong to say, you can't choose on their behalf. All you can do is look after yourself, go in there, ask the question. If they say no, say no. I always start when in that situation with, look, I'm here to talk about your property. If it's of no interest to you and I'm going to offend you, please just tell me to go away, and I'm happy to do that. It's what I do to telemarketers when they ring me at 6 o'clock just when I'm about to have dinner. I'm nice. I say, I'm not interested. Please go away. And most of them just hang up and go. So the same thing when you're looking at those properties, give them the opportunity to listen to what you've got to say. Now, in that, like Dintner says, there's got to be a benefit for the owner to do it. It's got to be a win-win situation, and we've spoken about this on podcasts before about making sure that you have a structured deal and to be able to put to the owner to say, this is the benefit for me, but also there's a benefit for you. Right now, your property is only worth this much. We agree that that's what it's worth. But if we do this deal and I put my knowledge into the deal and get it through and do something to it, get approval, it's going to be worth a lot more. And how about, you know, we split the extra costs at the end. So instead of getting their 400, they may get 450 and you'll get 50 grand or whatever out of it, just because you've put it towards, you've given them the opportunity and yourself the opportunity to move forward.
And that's if it's a sharing the profit with the current owner. But there's a lot of scenarios where they just want to sell and they haven't put it with an agent, they haven't got around doing any of that, but you know, you knocked on their door and You've presented them with a situation where they go, you know what, I'm actually thinking about doing that. So, you've turned up at the exact right time to make this happen. So, door knocking, letters, going through the agents. Obviously, the agents have got software that can tell you who owns what and whatever else. You know, they'll be paying commissions, but that's okay. There's lots of avenues to do that. So, the first thing is, find out what the zonings are, where zonings changed. So a step that we've missed in the middle there is actually precedence in the area. Let's have a talk about that, Ian.
Yeah, the same software that we were speaking about before, you can actually get an overview map, and it's called a...
You can do it through Google Earth.
You can do it through Google Earth as well, but what I like about the overview map of some of the software is if you can get a cadastral maps or cadastral map, and that's where it actually... Did I say that right?
I got no idea. I can think is cadaver or cadaver, where there's a dead body thing when you said that.
Well, a cadaver gets chopped up, and a cadastral map actually shows the chop-up of the subdivisions. And so if someone's gone... from an overview, you can actually see the boundaries of all properties. So if someone... If you see a whole lot of... one particular block that has a lot of single houses, but on that block there might be a few that have actually got... in their own block have been chopped up, well, it means that in that area they're allowing multi-unit developments. In some areas...
Or smaller blocks.
So an example of ours was we had a large block, so and we could subdivide it as a battle axe block, so a driveway down beside the front block. But the council had changed its development control plan. It was in New South Wales. And on my particular block, we couldn't actually subdivide it anymore because they changed the rules and regulations around it, and we were just undersized. But because we had precedents that were set next door and on the other side of us, we actually went to council and said, we know that you're not allowed to use precedent, but you would be pretty harsh to enforce that on us. So we'd like to go along and see if we can get it through, considering that next door's been and on both sides have done exactly the same thing. So looking for those precedents mean that you can have an argument, a conversation with the council or a negotiation with the council to say, how about we do this? And that's a very important part of moving forward on any deal, that you have a good, strong conversation with the council, and rather than being bullish about it, ask them what they want on that area, on that particular block. What would you like
very
to see
important.
There?
Very important.
So I always like to go in and have a meeting with the council, preferably the planners and preferably one of the senior planners, so that you can say, look, I don't own this property yet, or you might be controlling the property, and that's a talk for another day, controlling a property, and you'll say, look, we've got this property here down the road, they've got a few bits and pieces, and I think I would like to do this on there. Does that what council would like to see? What would council like to see? So you're putting the emphasis and the decision making on their part in a meeting where they're saying this is what we want, and then that makes it easier for you in an application. Now, we did exactly that on one of our properties recently, and we went in and we said, this is what we'd like to do. I've done some rough plans on what we'd like to do. What do you think? Would you be happy with that? Or what is it the council would like to see? And they actually brought in the strategic direction officer for the council, and they sat down and they looked at it and they said, we actually don't like your plan. And I said, I'm fine with that. What would you like to see on there? They said, we're actually looking at a zoning change in that area and we'd like to see this type of development. And I said, that's no problem at all. We'll go back and we'll come back to the drawing board with you, and we'll see with the new drawings what you like.
And the great thing about that is that you've got the council on side. They've had a major input into what you actually end up putting up for approval through to the council. And I can tell you now, that being the case, you're going to get a lot better response back from council of what they, you know, that of an approval on something, because they've had an input into what you've actually submitted. So, you know, and a lot of the little crinkles that get talked about along the way get ironed out, and it goes through a lot quicker and easier and all the rest of the stuff. So please create those relationships.
Yeah, I hear too many times stories of people arguing with councils, and look, 90...
It's a hard battle to win.
You do win them, because it's statistics show that by arguing the council and taking it to a land environment court, generally the council will only win 3% of the cases, but it's going to cost you $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 in legal fees to get to the point where you finally win. And it's not really a win because you've just lost $70,000. That's the profit in your deal. It's just not worth going down that line. Work with the council from the beginning, and if it's not going to work, just don't do the job.
Too easy to, there's too many other deals out there that are easier to do. You have to do a hard one. Let's talk about finding these properties and the rezonings and all of that kind of stuff. Some of the councils, particularly in less metropolitan areas and things like that, aren't actually on the internet. What do we do then?
You can drive the streets and have a look at areas. So do some rough areas on a Google map, just circle them in a red pen. Walk yourself into the council. Ask for the duty planner, and so the duty planner is that town planner that is on playground duty for that day. So
playground
duty. Yes. Yeah. So every day, one of the planners in the office has the obligation to serve the front counter. So go in, speak to the duty planner, and generally they have all their maps are laminated sitting under the front counter there, and they can pull it out. They can put it on there. You can go through the colour coding with them. Because they're planners, they generally know what you can and can't do in those areas. The other thing you can do is talk to a local private town planner. So in those areas where the councils don't have an electronic website that you can look stuff up, generally you'll have town planners in the area that are country, regional people. They're really easy to deal with. They're happy to talk to you. They're happy to give you information without charging you a large amount of money, or if any money at all, because generally in that area there are going to be very few planners, and if you go ahead with that job, you're probably going to use that private town planner anyway.
That's right. And, you pay for your service, and you've got somebody who's got the inside knowledge on the job, and they're the ones that are going to be helping you submit and talk to council and all the rest of it. And, when it comes to town planning, there is a little bit of a old boys club kind of thing going on where they talk the same language, they got the same degree, they, prefer to talk to somebody who really knows what they're talking about than a layman, and, there's a little bit of that goes on.
And generally the private town planners, not all of them, but a lot of them have actually previously worked within the council and have gone out privately. So they know people in there, they know all the rules and regulations and what the council's looking for.
Mm. Okay, so targeting these areas, I think there is a big market at the moment in suburbs all around the country that have had zoning changes. The town plans have been changing a lot over the last little while, where you've got infill areas, I call them, where they've been rezoned from single housing to multiple housing of some description. There's all sorts of variances in there, but these are the opportunities, and it is totally untapped. You need to be doing that due diligence at home. You need to be researching this, and it's easy to do once you've had a bit of a practice. You'll get actually quite quick at it. You'll know the council zoning and colour coding and whatever else in varying areas, and then you need to sit down and go systematically through area by area by area, identify the properties that haven't had any manufactured growth strategies actually done on them, and then systematically, select 10 a week that you chase and follow up on and do all the rest of it. And the next week we've got 10 more to go and do. And this is where most people fall over, because they're not consistent. They don't have a structured plan in place to attack this sort of thing. It's sort of like, haphazard. Oh, no, they said no, so that didn't work. And, and then they jump onto the next property in another town, somewhere else, different strategy. And it's like, stay consistent, guys. This is, this is bread and butter, and you should allocate a certain amount of your week every week to a consistent bread and butter strategy. This is one of them, and if this is your strategy for manufactured growth to create equity and possibly cash flow as well, mainstream metro areas, just repeat, repeat, repeat.
Yeah, your other opportunity there too is, like Dimna says, stay in one area and look around that. Now, you're probably going to start talking to a lot of the local agents. Most of the local agents will have some idea that there is development potential on some blocks. And if you have some good relationships with them...
I wouldn't go that far. wouldn't go that far that most of them will know that there's development potential.
Some of them will pretend that they know, but by that stage, if they bring... And so what I'm saying is develop a relationship with them, and rather than... And look, real estate agents are looking for the easy sell. They don't want to have to do all the marketing and turn up at all the local houses. They just want to sell the property. So as soon as they've got a listing, the first thing they do is they go back to their office and they ring all the people that they think or may not think are interested in the property, and they say, look, I've got a good property, it's just about to go on the market, do you want to have a look at it? Yeah. I get a lot of those phone calls.
So do I. And
the beauty about them is that you can say, give me 10 minutes, I'll have a look at it. Now, because you've been researching the area, you know what you can and can't do in most of the streets because you know what the planning is, you can really quickly look at it and go, I can do something there, so I'll actually ring back the agent and tell him I am interested and do an inspection. Or you can ring him back and go, sorry, look, it's not what I'm looking for. I can't do what I need to do on there. But don't stop calling me.
Keep me on your list. Yeah. Absolutely. You've got to stay on those A lists with the agents. Honestly, they need to be your best friends. They need to be the feeder for you for the deals.
Now, a word of warning here. When you get called by that agent, you will feel like you're the only person in the world and they're only calling you. But they're calling another 20 or 30 properties. So don't muck around on the deal. If it's a good deal, make sure you're looking at it.
Very, very good point. Okay, Ian, well, that's probably it for us for today. I hope that's helped. I hope you found that a little bit interesting. Get out there and have a play, you know. Get out there and jump on a few council websites, even whether you're interested or you're not interested, just to see what we're talking about. Have a look at that. Have a look at the precincts in the area, in the street, in the suburb, etc. You know, look at the town planning maps. Look at the zonings. And get to know them, because it's great for you to be doing, regardless of whether you're market ready for it or not, because when you are... You need to put this system into place and repeat, repeat, repeat. Final words?
Thank you for having me.
Get out there and do it. Okay, guys, we're going to be back again to talk to you very, very soon. And remember to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. It makes it easier. You know, you get them downloaded to you straight away. And there's lots of good information that is there for you to go back and have a look at some of the other stuff on, remember, www.iloverealestate.tv. And stay subscribed, and we'll be having lots more stuff to come out to you very, very soon. Thanks, guys, and we'll catch you again next time. Bye for now.